Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Today, we get to hear from Jason Lewis, and Jason is one of our team members. We love Jason and really excited to hear him share. As he's walking up here, watch this video.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
He'll be here to take pictures with all the children.
Yeah!
Just keep your receipts. 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
Santa's coming to town.
Yes.
Can you sign this for me?
Oh, hi. Santa's coming.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Eastlake. Really excited to have you guys here. I'm pumped to be with you today. Merry Christmas. It's exciting. My first time ever giving the Christmas message, which, if you didn't know, is kind of a big deal. So I'm actually really grateful for the opportunity. If you know me, I'm kind of like the story nerd. I'm kind of a sucker for holidays anyways, but especially holidays that have any sort of like myth or lore or legend or anything kind of like that is really just absolutely in my wheelhouse. And mostly because I'm just a fan of anything that creates space for people to be a bit more open, a bit more awake, and encourages us to love one another. So it's my hope today that this is more of an experience than a talk. This is generally kind of a teaching environment. So you come and someone postulates an idea as to what might be useful for you, and then you kind of, you know, you get to choose whether you like it or you don't. Today is more about experiencing something emotionally, spiritually. It has less to do with facts and truth and everything needing to make sense, and kind of more about what Christmas has always been to me, which is about magic, and it's about wonder, and it's about feels and vibes and stories. So today is about the stories, and the stories that I like best, which I tend to always think are the best, are the stories that are about what I call the should-be's. And to give you an example, I have a niece, Zara. She's about 5 years old. And she recently went to the museum, and she just, like this museum in Seattle, and I don't know which one, but it could be the Museum of Flight or something like that. But anyways, she came back just with every kind of review on it, like, we saw this, and we saw that, and we saw this. But in particular, the part that kind of blew her away was all the elements of flight, so these jets and these rockets and, you know, warplanes and everything. And she's trying to tell us this story. She wants to translate this experience to us. And so she's telling us, and I'm like, oh my gosh, a warplane, no way. She goes, yeah, and then we saw this crazy biplane that can land on water. And I was like, no way. And she could tell that no matter how many facts she gave me, she could not get me to have the experience that she had. So she did what good storytellers do. She said, and there's one other thing. And I said, what's that? She goes, there was a rocket. And I go, no way. And she's like, yeah. And two kids got in it, and it took off. I was like, what? She goes, yep, shot into space, went around the sun, came back, landed. They got out. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, I can't believe it either. Unbelievable, right? To which my mom, I love her, but she looks at Zara and she goes, now is that true? Is that what really happened? To which my niece goes, I really wanted it to be true. And it should have been. And that last line, I remember sitting in the kitchen just hearing that line, it like totally, that's how I felt a lot of my life, especially with stories. And that to me is what Christmas is about. It's about what should come to pass, what the magic of love and hope should look like. what they should do, how long they should last, and what they should transform and overcome and enable. So that is what today is about. So we're going to get started. However, are there any kids in the room? Any kids? Raise your hands. I need to see you. I'm going to let you know you have an unbelievable power that when you get to my age, it starts to fade because you have eyes to see and ears to hear and hearts that can feel things because the rest of us adults were very busy being 30, 40, 50, and 60. We've forgotten how to see, how to hear, and how to feel like you, not needing all the information, not needing all the facts, just able to live in the moment, present to the experience that's handed to you, not needing to reference the story you know, the story you're hearing, just allowing that story to be added to into your catalog. So before we can begin, we need everyone in the room to be like children. So I'm going to have you guys close your eyes for a moment. And I want you to go back and think about that perfect Christmas, that one true Christmas, what your shoes were like, what kind of clothes you wore back then, what your mother's house smelled like, what the food tasted like, the way the songs made you feel. To be aware that you had made it a full year to this day, the day that in a few hours, magic would visit you. Wonder would arrive to your unique home that knows specifically you, and that wonder and magic have brought something just for you, something you've longed for. That one really good Christmas. Now, if you feel this, you can open your eyes. Now, hopefully, everyone in this room should be between the age of about 5 and 12. And as such, my sweet children, we can begin. Before we do, I'd like to have you listen to a reading from my friend Anna Silva. She comes up and reads it. It's a poem by Mary Oliver that helps us to understand the magic that lives inside us when we're kids.
Thank you, Jason. It is a reading from Mary Oliver titled Angels. You, my friend, might see an angel anytime and anywhere. Of course, you have to open your eyes to a kind of second level, but it's not really hard. You know, the whole business of what reality is and what isn't has never been solved and probably never will. So I don't care to be too definite about anything. I have lots of edges and called perhapses, and almost nothing I can call certainty. For myself, at least, not for other people. You know, that's a place you just can't really get into. At least not entirely, anyway. Someone's head. So I would just leave you with this. I don't care how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. All I care is that for some people, they exist, and that they can dance.
Charlie, it's just not logical. How can one man, in one night, visit all the children of the world?
Not everyone celebrates Christmas. And I think there's some sort of time continuum that breaks down what stands in the sleigh.
What about fireplaces? A lot of people don't have them. How does Santa visit those people?
He turns into Jell-O and the fireplace kind of appears and goes through it like this.
What about the reindeer? Have you ever seen a reindeer fly?
Yes.
Well, I haven't.
Have you ever seen $1 million?
No.
Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
So as we begin today, I'll be telling you two stories that I wrote. A lot of it you will recognize, and a lot of it you will not. It is my hope that in the same way, from both the reading and the clip, you understand that the important part is being present for what is said and allowing it to work on you, not trying to answer it, solve it, put it in the lens of what you know it to be. So the first story goes like this. Far, far away in the north, where the ground is as cold as ice and is always covered in snow, lived a man, a very old, a very large, and a very round man. A man whose laughter soared on moonlit nights and a beard so white and so bright it looked like strings of starlight. Check the rhyme game. Anyways, some of you know of who I speak, but some of you do not know how he came to be. For within this man beats an ancient heart, a blessed heart, gifted to him eons ago by an ancient spirit. He has been called many names in this world: Saint Nicholas, Father Christmas, Yule, Sinterklaas, Jolnir, and Lanbror. But I, as many, know him as Kris Kringle. Now, when he was a boy, he longed for a family, because Kris Kringle was born an orphan. He longed to love and care for something and for someone, and like most of us, he also longed to be loved as well. So he spent his days and his life finding ways to show not just the people he cared for, but all he knew how much love he had for them, even and especially those that didn't much care for him. He was a toy maker, a woodsman, a carpenter. He made it his life's work to sing, to make, to gather and join, but mostly to give. In fact, he would often host large feasts and feed those who hungered. He sang songs of jubilation. He put on plays and parties for orphans, and he sought to bring peace between neighboring tribes and communities. And once a year, he would bring a toy to every child in his village. But not just any toy, the desire of their heart. For Kris Kringle knew that it was for him so often to go with not only what he needed, but also what he wanted. And as most of us know, it is in obtaining a bit of what we want. That's what makes life feel like magic. It's what lets us know that the universe sees us. He was greatly beloved by his village, his family, and all who knew his name. But one night, late in his life, on December 24th, or as we know it, Christmas Eve, he went outside his home to gather some firewood as he usually did, but on the return journey home, the ground gave way and he slipped into an icy crevice. He was so cold and so alone. He tried to yell a number of times, but nobody could hear him. And as time wore on, he began to accept a very hard truth, that he was going to die this day. He got colder and colder, and just before he took his last breath, an ancient and mighty spirit appeared before him. It spoke loudly and firmly and asked him, "What do you want?" Well, Kris Kringle was terrified, and he replied, I have no idea what you mean. And the voice repeated, "What is it, Kris Kringle, that you desire?" He was so weak and tired, he could only say what was in his heart: "To care for the children of my village, to care for my family. I just wish to continue the love that I've experienced in my life and to give that love to all the children without it." To which the spirit grew bright and said, "This I can grant you, but only under one condition. It cannot be simply the children of your village that you love and care for, but the entire world. Every child that was, is, and will be." To which he replied with exuberance, "Absolutely, I accept." Then he thought for a moment, "I don't know how I'm going to do this. It's impossible." To which the Spirit replied, "Well, with help." And the Spirit flitted away to a very special place that sits at the center of everything. The Nords call it Yggdrasil. It's the world tree. And from it flow all the universes, every world, and everything that is. But the tree bears a remarkable fruit. Hearts. It makes living hearts. In fact, every living thing that's in the universe bears one of these hearts from Yggdrasil. But at the very top of the tree, it produces the most rare and delicate hearts, filled and imbued with unbelievable power. And so the Spirit climbs to the top of the tree, and he finds a very unique heart, one of gold and red and green, smooth like glass. And he grabs it and pulls it down and flies back to Kris Kringle. And he says, "I will give you this heart, but it's imbued with many odd powers. It will grant you eternal life. You will be able to shrink and grow yourself to any size at will, so sliding down the chimney should be no trouble at all. You'll be able to travel at tremendous speeds, almost outside of time, allowing you to go wherever you wish, whenever you wish. You'll know the full name, the desire, and the date of birth of every child that has ever lived and will ever live. You'll be able to give other things the power of flight, like perhaps a reindeer. You'll be able to craft amazing toys and objects like bottomless sacks that can carry endless loads of presents. And you, my friend, will be able to survive on milk and cookies alone." So he places the heart inside Kris Kringle and says to him, "You are no longer Kris Kringle, but now you are the Santa Claus, the grand protector, lover, and watcher of children." And that's how he becomes the Santa Claus, as we know him today, with his mighty big laughter and rosy cheeks. He's seen billions of children in his life and has remained still to this day ever curious about every one of us, the desires of our heart, and with the greatest hope that we may know that we are seen, that we count, and that most importantly, we are loved. The end.
Well, hey, everyone. Excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com, and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
Now, before I begin my second story, I'd like to do a second reading with my friend David. This is a story written by a man named Neil Gaiman, and it's a conversation between two really old and ancient forces in the universe: life and death, good and bad, and in this particular story, darkness and the Lord of Dreams. And it goes like this.
"I am a dire wolf. Prey stalking, lethal prowler."
"Well, I am a hunter, horse mounted, wolf stabbing."
"Well, I am a horsefly, horse stinging, hunter throwing."
"Ah, but I am a spider, fly consuming, eight legged."
"Well, I am a snake, spider devouring, poison toothed."
Well, I'm an ox, snake-crushing, heavy-footed.
Well, I am anthrax, butcher bacterium, warm life-destroying.
Well, I am a world, space-floating, and life-nurturing.
Well, I am a nova, all-exploding, planet-cremating.
Well, I am the universe, all things encompassing, all life embracing.
Well, I am anti-life, the beast of judgment. I am the dark at the end of everything, the end of universes, gods, worlds, of everything. And what will you be then, Dream Lord?
Well, I am hope.
By the time the sun rises, it will all be over. See you in the morning.
Clyde Archibald Northcutt, 422 Dashwood Drive, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Ha! Yeah, you made the most naughty list in 68. Oh boy, that was a very, very naughty year.
How could you possibly remember that?
You asked me for a Superman cape. But I didn't give you a Superman cape, did I? Do you always wear glasses, Clyde?
If you think this is going to change anything, you are
sadly... Four-eyed Clyde. I'm going to bet that's what they called you.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Oh, and do you think that after a while of being called Four-eyed Clyde, you maybe got a little angry? Maybe you started a fight or two. Maybe 10, maybe 12. So you asked me for something. Superman cape. Because you thought that that was going to change everything.
This is ridiculous.
Oh, so you decide to stay Four-Eyed Clyde?
Only because Clark Kent wore glasses.
Oh, but when he turned into Superman, he didn't need those darn glasses anymore, did he? Clyde. It was wrong of me not to give you that gift, Clyde. I fear that I had a very incorrect, misguided understanding of naughty children. So it's maybe a little late.
I'm a 45-year-old man. I'm not going to put on a silly...
On. For me.
Okay.
Attaboy. Glasses off.
So that reading and that clip, the second large part of Christmas lives in the notion of hope, that we as a people... In this season, we're all in very different places. For some of us, it is absolutely a season of joy and jubilation. And for others of us, it is profoundly heartbreaking and heavy because we are without sometimes the people we so dearly love and we miss. And it is in that place where the voice of darkness, where the sense that maybe you've been forgotten, that what you wanted will not arrive. But that Christmas is also a season of hope, that in the face of darkness, it is our odd and unique ability as human beings to believe in something that should be, that should come to pass. And so we begin the second story, My Sweet, Sweet Children. And it goes like this. Far, far away in the south, where the ground is as hot as the sun and always covered in sand, lived a man. A very brown, a very lean, and a very wise man. A man whose teachings traversed the entire world. A man whose skin was of bronze, and his hair woolly like a lamb. Some of you know of who I speak, but some of you do not know how he came to be. For within this man beats an ancient heart, a blessed heart, gifted to him eons ago by an ancient spirit. He has been called by many names in this world. Emmanuel, Prince of Peace, King of Kings, Lord of hosts, Yeshua, healer and logos. But I know him as Joshua. Now, when he was a boy, he was very bright, outspoken, always a defender of the little guy. But more than anything, he loved his people. Because, in a manner of speaking, he too was an orphan. And the people who took him in, while they loved him so dearly, that he wanted to protect, guide, and be a sign of hope to them and all he knew. Now, as a child, it's important to know that he was hunted by a wicked king, was born in a cave underneath a mighty star, surrounded by animals, and a group of kind, if curious, men. As he grew up, he watched how his people suffered, as they were often slaves and poorly treated. So he spent his youth caring for anyone that he could, fetching water, bandaging wounds, cleaning, speaking and caring for the blind and lame. He loved to play and look out for the orphans, and he told the very best stories. Everyone wanted to hear them. But for Joshua, there was one story that really, really nagged at him. See, his people were a people of stories, and there was a story about a man who would come to save his people. He longed to meet this man, but if being honest, his deepest desire was to be him. As he got older, people began to follow him. People came from far and wide to hear him speak and tell his beautiful stories. However, while this made Joshua happy, and he loved to see the hope that he could bring to people, it didn't feel like enough. It wasn't what he truly wanted. So one afternoon, he told his friends he was going to take a walk and that he'd be back soon. The walk was only supposed to take an hour. Ended up being about 40 days and 40 nights. But as you can imagine, it's a very, very long walk. He grew tired and thirsty. He grew so hot that toward the end, he collapsed in the sand, unable to move, his breathing ragged and rapid. And he knew that as time wore on, that he may have to accept a very hard truth, that he was going to die this day. He grew hotter and hotter, and just before he took his last breath, an ancient spirit appeared before him. It spoke loudly and firmly and asked him, "What do you want?" Well, Joshua was terrified and replied, "I have no idea what you mean." And the voice repeated, "What is it, Joshua, that you desire?" He was so weak and so tired, he could only say what was in his heart. "I wish to save my people. I wish to be their hope." To which the spirit grew bright and said, "This I can grant you, but under one condition. It cannot simply be your people you seek to save and be a hope for, but the entire world, every person that was, is, and will be." To which he replied with exuberance, "Absolutely, I accept." Then he thought for a moment, how would he do this? "It's impossible." To which the spirit replied, "Well, with help." And he flitted off to this place that the Jews call the Hall of Guff. It's a large hall. It's where every soul is created waiting to be placed into another human body. And there's all kinds of souls, all different shapes, colors. But back at the very end of the hall is a very small door. It's only one of these doors. It's gold, and it has a small little lock on it. And the spirit walks up to it and opens the door very carefully. And this soul is different than the others. Tremendously bright, like a mini sun almost. You can feel the warmth of it the second you see it. And this heart is filled with unbelievable powers. And so the spirit took the heart and brought it back to Joshua. And he said, "I can give you this heart. But I tell you, this heart comes with unbelievable gifts and powers, and they are to be used wisely. You shall have eternal life. You will find that you can walk on water, that you'll be able to calm storms and tame seas. You'll be able to heal the sick and stand the lame. You'll be able to turn water into wine, I know, it's a very niche power, has very limited applications, but you're gonna find a use for it. You'll be able to destroy monsters, or back in that time, they would call them demons. You'll be able to multiply food, but your most and greatest power will be that you could raise people from the dead with your tears alone. The Spirit places the soul into Joshua and says to him, you are now no longer Joshua. You are now the Christ, the grand protector, lover, and hope of humankind. So that's how he becomes Jesus Christ, as we know him today, with his overflowing heart of love and his shepherd's cane. He's seen billions of humans in his life and has remained still to this day ever curious about each and every one of us, the desires of our heart, and with the greatest hope that we may know that we are seen, that we count, and that most importantly, we are loved. The end. Thank you for listening to my two stories. In closing, I'd just like to say that the reason why Santa Claus exists, in my mind, is because children are worthy of him existing, because he should be, because they need him. And this is the same with us and Christ. We're worthy of him. He should be. And we need him. You see, children, the problem with adults is that they often confuse the facts from the truth. I'm going to tell you that sometimes the facts do not reveal the truth, because sometimes the truth is what should be. Sometimes it is knowing how we should love, how we should hope, how we should live, that the deepest truths and clearest paths forward are revealed. And in our time, especially when the world is full of people arguing about the facts, about what is, we could use more of you all. A few more truths, some more should be's, because we adults have to keep in mind something we often forget. Fairy tales do not tell children that dragons exist. Children know dragons exist. Fairy tales tell children that dragons can be killed. Christmas doesn't tell us that Santa exists. Children know that Santa exists. Christmas tells children that Santa knows them. And spirituality and religion do not tell adults that God exists. Adults know God exists. And I know I pushed some buttons there, so just roll with me. Okay. Spirituality tells adults that God says they too are absolutely and unequivocally worthy of otherworldly, unbelievable, transformative, never-ending, and unconditional love. So this season, in every moment, you'll be presented with a choice. In every awkward familial conversation, every stressful moment, and every single passing minute. And I hope you choose the magic. I hope you choose Christmas. I hope you choose the should-be's. I hope you choose the truth. Thank you for your time, and thank you for listening to me. And may you have a merry, merry, merry Christmas and a happy new year. Thank you for your time, and have a great week.